And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my countryland, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting and talking diabetes. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count and be free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down real life, I'm fighting in a foreign diabetes. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You run down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down real life, I'm fighting in a foreign diabetes. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. And you run down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Don't want to beat a dead horse, so to speak, but I think really this does need repeating. Now the death toll in Ceylon or Sri Lanka is up to, and this is may even be a few hours out of date, up to 409. That is 409 Christians, almost all of them Sri Lankan, a few were white people, tourists from the West, some Chinese, etc. But let's say essentially 407 Sri Lankan Catholics. Almost all of them were murdered at two Catholic churches on Sunday, on Easter Sunday, attending Easter Sunday ceremonies. Now, that's all very important. This was Easter. It wasn't just that these folks were worshippers, although that really shouldn't matter. But it was very special, the most sacred day in the Catholic, in fact, in the Christian liturgical calendar, the day Christ rose. It's now absolutely official. ISIS claims responsibility. There were 9 suicide bombers. One was a woman. There's even a picture put up on the ISIS website of most of these suicide bombers, of course, wearing their brave masks, of course, with some radical Islamic preacher in Ceylon who seems to be the group leader. So this is not speculation, this is not conspiracy theories or anything of the nature. ISIS claims the crime for its own. Well, in some ways that's helpful. So there's no mystery here. I know initially that there was great reluctance on the part of the powers that be to gag out the dread, I, that's it, or M, or Muslim, or Islamic. But no longer. It's quite clear these are the people who did it. Now, it gets even worse. Among the best intelligence services in the Far East are the Indians from India, And they had warned the Sri Lankan or Ceylonese government about this, that there was an attack that was imminent. It seems that there was either an incredible screw up in the Sri Lankan intelligence services, or worse. But and this has not been the first time where people have been warned on credible grounds, and they've simply ignored or missed the warning. So we mustn't be too arrogant about it here in Canada, because we did exactly the same thing back when the radical Sikhs blew up Air India back in 1986. Indian intelligence had warned the Canadians, had warned them that an attack was imminent. It was going to be on an airplane. Duh. You think maybe some precautions might have been taken? Well, if that's what you thought, you'd be wrong. okay. So, we now know who did it. There is some rumor out there that it was done as retaliation for the white nationalists who shot up the mosque in Christchurch. Well, that is out there. But an expert who reads, who monitors the communications of ISIS, as their website, etc., said there was no indication that was the motive. So it wasn't payback or anything like that. It was plain and simple terror unleashed at Christians. Let's be quite clear about that. Christians. And to be equally clear, Christians who, for the most part, or overwhelmingly, were not white. These are Sri Lankan Christians. Now, where does that leave all of us? Well, first place is we've got to go after our political authorities and say, now get with it. Target the people who are doing this. And this is a big problem. There is a chronic reluctance on the part of our political class, particularly in Canada, to mention the dread word about who's doing it. Who is doing this? Well, it's radical Muslims. Now, don't forget, of course, that we have been propagandized going right back to the attack on 9/11. Remember one of the first things that you heard after that? Almost as if this was the most important thing. Remember George Bush saying, Islam is religion of peace. And you know, he was often thought not to be too bright. But even at the time, once we knew that the major perpetrators were Muslims, well, I mean, they were all Muslims. Now, whether there was some force behind them, quarterbacking them, that's open to, for discussion. But the people who flew those planes into the World Trade, into the Twin Towers, into that field in Pennsylvania. These weren't Buddhists. These weren't Jains. These weren't Christians. These were Muslims, apparently doing it in the name of Islam. Okay? And Bush assured us, right off the bat, Islam is a religion of peace. You wonder, well, is the guy just not very bright? I mean, how do you say that after this outrage? And of course, our own prime minister at the time, Jean Chrétien, le petit gars de Shawinigan, the little boy from Shawinigan. Well, he asserted the same thing. Islam is religion of peace. You wonder, is that guy on crack cocaine? I mean, what's he talking about? A religion of peace. Okay, so let's get this very, very straight. we're told that Islam is a religion of peace. We're also told that one of the big problems, at least this is the position of the Canadian government, of our poorly dressed Foreign Affairs Minister Chrystia Freeland, who said this at the United Nations a couple of weeks ago, one of the biggest security threats is, get this, you might not get it actually, white supremacy. and Islamophobia. Now, this cannot be allowed to slide, and I've got this all over the internet. This anti-white, insane thinking must not be allowed to slide. No way. The problem is not white supremacy. There's no security threat to Canada from so-called white supremacy or white nationalism. There may be, I hope in the long runs, a problem that white nationalism will pose to the Canadian regime and eventually overthrow it and restore white our people. But nonetheless, and Islamophobia. Now, we've been told this by the Liberal Party establishment and some people in the media and by the anti-racism industry for the last three or four years, anyway, at least, that one of the major problems is Islamophobia. Now, I like to look at the meaning of words. Well, what would Islamophobia mean? Well, it would mean, literally speaking, a phobia or fear from the Greek phobos of Muslims or of the Islamic religion. Now, a couple questions. Well, okay, if that's what it means, would a fear be wrong? You know, like if you are afraid of you're afraid of ladybugs. You have a phobia about ladybugs. Well, I would say probably maybe you had a bad experience as a little child. You saw a ladybug crawling on you and it scared you. Well, one can help you and say, well, okay, ladybugs are harmless. They're not going to do you any mischief. We'll try to teach you a little bit about ladybugs. But if you have a fear of snakes, is that wrong, irrational? Well, no, it isn't. It depends how you handle it. Snakes can hurt people. That's true. A poisonous snake, well, it's obvious. If it bites you, it's going to cause you some severe problems, maybe even kill you. Even a snake that is not poisonous, if it bites you and it breaks the flesh, you're going to get a lot of bad germs in you, which could make you sick. Fear of snakes wrong or irrational? Well, no. In fact, it's quite rational. It depends what you do with it. Do you take your fear of snakes to the point that anytime you see a snake, you want to pick up an axe and kill it? Well, now that's going overboard. If it means you'll try to avoid them, and you won't be picking snakes up willy-nilly, and you know if you're climbing or trekking in danger in snake country, you wear high boots and you're careful where you put your hand. That's prudent. There's nothing wrong with being having a fear, let's say, of snakes. Okay, well, what about Muslims or Islam? Well, Islam is a religion of conquest. I know Bush told us it's a religion of peace. Well, it's not a religion of peace. It has, over the years, gone through periods where it has attempted to conquer its neighbors, first in the Middle East and then bursting out across North Africa in the 9th century and into Europe and Spain. Islam occupied much of Spain for several hundred years into the south of France, where it was finally beaten back by Charles Martel. But it continued largely through the Ottoman Empire, the Turkish Empire, to push up through the Balkans. It occupied a good deal of what's now the Balkans, Albania, the former Yugoslavia. And what it was last stopped at the gates of Vienna in 1683. So, and for hundreds of years thereafter, Turkish or Islamic pirates or corsairs raided Christian villages along the Mediterranean, taking away people, kidnapping people, women who we put into harems, or basically in today's politically correct, these into sex slavery. And the men either castrated or impressed into the Turkish army as a group that were called the Janissaries. Now, that's reality. That so it's not unreasonable to be concerned or worried about Muslims or Islam. There are over 100 Christians murdered every week. Almost all of them in the third world, almost all of them not white. And they're murdered by Muslims, to a very, very lesser extent in some parts of India by radical Hindus. But the big victims, the big fear, danger is not Islamophobia, but Christophobia, or phobia, or fear, or hatred of Christians. That's the reality. So, okay, let's try to hold our rascally, lying politicians to account. No, a big security threat to Canada is not Islamophobia. In fact, if they're not concerned about Islam, then they are stupid. And it's not white supremacy. You know, if you want to tote up a body count, well, a self-proclaimed white supremacist, and I don't agree with what he did, the man who shot the two mosques in Christchurch, what's his body count? 50. What happened over the weekend in Sri Lanka, and the body count will grow, it's up to 407. So you tell me, what's the greatest threat? Oh yes, and of course, Sri Lanka on the weekend was only perhaps the most dramatic of killings. There have been other killings over the past few months that reached at least 100, almost all of them in the third world, the victims Christians, to say nothing of smaller incidents. And then, of course, we have the incident that kicked off last week, Holy Week, Monday, in Paris. One of the iconic sites in all of France, whether you're Christian or secular, was Notre Dame Cathedral, severely damaged by fire. Oh yeah, of course we haven't yet heard what caused it. It seemed like a massive blaze in an era where obviously old buildings like this are a concern, or their safety is a concern. How did this happen? How did it get so far when it was out of control? We don't know. At least we don't have answers yet. But it's certainly a viable concern as to whether it was man-made. And, well, who might have done it? Well, there are several likely suspects, one of them being radical Islam. We do know that in the past 2 years, over 800 Christian churches, most of them Catholic, have been severely vandalized in France by radical Muslims. So, don't give me any more of this. Oh, there's a danger of Islamophobia. There's no danger in fear of radical Islam and the spread of radical Islam. And this has big implications. Who should we be letting into our countries? This is a difficult question. It's one that President Trump has grappled with, and when he was a candidate, he said there should be a temporary moratorium on Muslims entering the United States, and you know that wasn't the whole sentence. The rest of the sentence was until the government can figure things out as to who is safe and who isn't. And I think that's a perfectly valid position until the government can figure it out. And I wouldn't pretend to have an idea how the government would figure these things out. But these are the type of issues we have to talk about, not prattle on like our idiot foreign affairs minister, the badly dressed, I mean, she has got to be the worst dressed member, minister in the Canadian Parliament. I mean, she dresses like that. Well, I won't use that word, but Chrystia Freeland. What she said to the United Nations was absolute bunk. Well, fortunately, some of our allies are looking at this and with raised eyebrows, like, what's going on here? And here's a news report about just that. Canada has been butting heads with some of its closest allies over the extent to which rising white supremacy at home and abroad poses a global threat, federal insiders say, and rightly so. I mean, this is nonsense. afraid, misread my source here. It's some, actually something I have to read. I actually had thought this was a voice. Okay. So Canada butts heads with G7 allies over white supremacy. Canada has been butting heads with some of our closest allies over the extent to which rising white supremacy at home and abroad is a threat. The quiet but at times controversial diplomacy has come as Justin Trudeau's Liberals, gearing up for a federal election campaign this fall, try to portray Conservative leader Andrew Scheer as being in cahoots with white supremacists. During the last 7 months, G7 meeting of foreign ministers in Dinard, France, Foreign Affairs Minister Chrystia Freeland met with a stiff resistance when she wanted the G7 to issue a joint statement after the mosque shootings of 50 people in Christchurch, but it didn't end up going out because we couldn't agree. Prior to that meeting, Freeland spoke at the United Nations, where she singled out white supremacy as the greatest security threat facing the world, remarks that later sparked a clash with a Conservative senator. When the ministers met in France in early April, some of her counterparts pushed back against Freeland's assertion that white supremacy now poses broader threats, the official said. She said a second Canadian official also speaking on condition of anonymity. These are obviously important issues for us and something we've been trying to speak up at home, but also abroad. Canadian officials said that the sources were reluctant to discuss who is pushing back against Freeland. Probably the United States, says the source. It's demonstrated it was at odds at times with the G7 or other Western groups. Then that wouldn't be a false assumption, said an anonymous source. President Trump was widely criticized for playing down the connection to white supremacy, saying it was not a rising danger despite the gunman's lengthy history. Well, now... the U.S. Justice Department found that hate crimes across the U.S., has risen for the third consecutive year in 2017. In contrast, in Canada, Statistics Canada found a sharp increase. Incidents targeting Muslims, Jews, and black populations account for most of the national increase, especially in Ontario and Quebec. The problem, of course, with this is hate crimes is so broadly defined that most of the time, they're not a crime at all. See, a hate crime can be, and I'm going to be dealing with this in just a minute, a hate crime can be reported that isn't a crime. For instance, if you found a spray-painted, let's say, hypothetically, a swastika spray-painted in a public washroom, you could call up your local B'nai B'rith and say, "Oh, there's a hate crime, I saw a swazi in the washroom." Well, if it's a crime at all, you know, and that's dubious, it's petty vandalism. Virtually nobody's ever going to be prosecuted for that, right? Okay. You don't know what the motive was. Hate would be a crime targeting somebody on a prohibited ground, you know, privileged people, in this case, religion. But one doesn't know what, as one hasn't found the perpetrator, nor is anybody being charged, nor anybody tried, nor anybody convicted. There isn't a crime. And as we don't know who did it, and we don't know that person's motives, we don't even know if it was a hate incident. But you see, these things pile up, and there will be numerous complaints from the usual crybaby crowd. Hate. But when you get right down to it, where's the evidence? So, although each year in Canada we've got the B'nai B'rith, the League for Human Rights of B'nai B'rith, that they will lovingly report each year every year it's just worse and worse and worse. Worse than the year before. Hate crimes have gone up every year for 30 years. Yet you practically think the National Socialists were back in town. The black shirts were just around the corner. We're about to have a gas chamber on every other street crossing, and none of this corresponds in the slightest to reality. Well, I'm going to tell you a story, and We're going to go through it with loving detail because, quite frankly, ladies and gentlemen, it's bullshit. No, not the story. The story's true. However, let us see how the Canadian establishment reacted, or I should say the Winnipeg establishment. Okay, from our ever-trusty CBC News. Hate crime attack on cafe staged. Oh, no, really? Yep. Winnipeg police say after owners charged with mischief. And this is the cafe in Winnipeg called the Burmax Cafe, probably after kind of a mixture of the name of the owners. Burmax Cafe. Wine and dine, the sign says outside. Family insists they didn't make up story of alleged attack and vandalism. Police say the restaurant was severely vandalized and spray painted with hateful graffiti in what they now allege was a staged attack. Now, I've read a number of these news stories, and you know, we're not even told what the graffiti is. Don't want you to know that. Anyway, here's the CBC, that's the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation story. It says, an anti-Semitic attack originally called the most brazen the city has seen was staged by the owners of the restaurant that reported it. You think? Yeah. When you see swastikas painted, we're not sure they were swastikas, but we'll assume that, somewhere. And the media's called. And there's a big boo-hoo-hoo and authorities, from the chief of police down to the mayor and the various councilmen, all looking with very solemn donkey faces about all the rise of hate, blah, blah, blah. Keep an open mind that they did it to themselves because it's happened again and again and again. But okay, let's play along with this. All three members of the family that owns Burmax Cafe and Bistro on Corydon Avenue have been arrested and charged with public mischief since the incident was initially reported last week. The family, however, insists they didn't fake anything. Well, I don't think the police would dare charge them. I mean, them being Jews and all, a privileged class. Unless they had them dead to rights, because it'd be worth the senior officers and the police chief's job if that happened. We didn't, because we don't joke about swastikas on our walls. Okay, Oksana Barrant said in an interview with Ismaila Alpha, host of CBC Manitoba's afternoon radio show Up to Speed. On Thursday evening, police responded to a report of an assault at the restaurant. A woman said she'd been assaulted, and the restaurant was spray-painted with hateful graffiti, the police said. Winnipeg Police Chief Danny Smythe said Wednesday the attack was staged. Quote, the anti-Semitic graffiti and vandalism were also falsely reported as being done by outside suspects. In other words, push comes to shove, they did it to themselves. Quote, we found evidence of a crime. It just wasn't a hate crime, said Smythe, adding the police expended considerable resources investigating and took the report seriously. Incidentally, in another report tonight, I learned that the police spent 1,000 man hours over the weekend. 1,000. What would that mean? Well, let's say a police shift is 10 hours. Well, divide that into 1,000. That's 100 police shifts. That's 100 policemen, or let's say it was several policemen pulling 10-hour shifts over several days. We're probably looking at 25 or 30 officers on this piddly-ass so-called crime. What was the crime, even as reported? Well, the woman said she'd been assaulted. Now, she apparently wasn't badly enough hurt to go to hospital. She wasn't in serious condition, and in other words, even as reported, it was a push and shove, and there was some vandalism. Now, okay, as reported, there may have been a crime. Yes, that deserves a police investigation. But 1,000 hours? I think it could have been an assault on the premier of the province, and he wouldn't have gotten that much. That is the absolutely broken state we are in because of minority-itis and cultural Marxism. Minorities rule this country. And at the top of the heap of privileged minorities, Jews. So the fact that it was a swastika, the cops come running. Had somebody, had this been a cafe owned by a Ukrainian or a Pole or a German, and somebody had written Nazi, 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 spray painted and shoved somebody, you might have gotten two officers to come around and investigate, maybe. And they probably wouldn't have been busting their rear ends to do it. Okay, the story goes on. Smite, that's the chief of police, says he is disappointed by the allegedly staging and fears it will promote cynicism. The incident took place the night before the start of Passover, a significant Jewish holiday. Yeah, I mean, it's all staged. This is drama. And he says he's disappointed that it will promote cynicism. Yeah, it ought to promote a whole lot of cynicism. Alexander Barron, 56, Oksana Barron, 48, and Maxim Barron, 29, have all been charged with public mischief and were released after being arrested, police say. They're slated to appear in court in Maine. Oksana Barron said she would never invent a story about an anti-Semitic crime, given her family's experience. Now, listen to this. You probably heard this one before. My grandmother's family, they died in the Holocaust. Just her and her little brother survived. The whole family. We don't joke about that, she said through tears. You know the number of times I've heard that? My entire family was wiped out in the so-called Holocaust. All except me and my brother. Or all except me and my sister. Or, you know? It's like a story churned out of Hollywood. The whole family's gone. And then actually when you press a little bit later, you find out more people survived. But okay, it makes a good story, doesn't it? Only my grandma and her sister survived. After the reports of the vandalism and attack surfaced last week, the chief executive officer of the Jewish Federation of Winnipeg said the group was horrified and saddened. Oh, yes. I can't fathom how or why people would want to do such a terrible act, said Elaine Goldstein. I'd have trouble fathoming it, too. Hey, except it didn't happen, did it? Federation spokesman Adam Levy called it the most brazen act of anti-Semitism that we've ever seen in our community, and perhaps ever. Wait a moment. If words mean anything in the English language, what do you mean, the most brazen act of anti-Semitism we've ever seen in our community, and perhaps ever? Ever? Well, you know, I don't believe that the 6 million died, as we're told in the Hollywood version of World War II. Well, wait a sec. Even if you believed something like that, wouldn't 6 million be a more brazen act than, a bit of vandalism and maybe a push and shove? I mean, talk about drama queens. But, you know, they manipulate the dumb media like a farmer leading a jackass around by its nose. It is pathetic. It's pathetic that there is so little skepticism. And the verbal overkill. This is an important person, presumably. He's a Federation, Jewish Federation of Winnipeg spokesman, Adam Levy, says it's the most brazen act of anti-Semitism that we've seen in our community. Really? Then, boy, you live in a pretty safe place. And, of course, that's the reality. Not only are the Jews absolutely catered to by the police and the mass media and the politicians, people are pretty laid back. People are really, Canadians are pussycats. If there was some symbols, well, apparently there were swastikas spray painted, although we didn't get that actually directly from the media, but the woman co-owner of the cafe said that. That is still pretty stunning. Okay, well, let's hear some more of the heavy breathing and overkill. In a written statement Wednesday afternoon, the Federation, that's the Jewish Federation of Winnipeg, said, "We are shocked and deeply disturbed by today's news. It is deplorable that anyone would make false allegations of anti-Semitism, especially claims of such a serious nature, for any kind of gain." There is some thought, and I heard this from a good friend of mine, that this may have all been staged as an insurance shakedown. And that, as you kind of very carefully parsed today's statement, "We're very shocked and deeply disturbed by today's news. It's deplorable that anyone would make false allegations of anti-Semitism, especially claims of such a serious nature, for any kind of gain." Well, it might be what does he call it here, shocking and disturbing or deplorable, but it's being done repeatedly over the past, just going back over the past decade. But when you read a story of an anti-Semitic, usually vandalism, you know, swastikas or some slogans, very often the perpetrators, for whatever motives, are Jews, whether it's someone seeking personal attention or somebody, anyway, won't speculate on the motives, but it seems to be a financial interest. Anyway, the spokesman for the gang, for the Jewish Federation, it doesn't take back what he said last week. He doesn't say, you know, we jumped to a conclusion. No, no, we switch tracks. So he says, false complaints of criminal acts of anti-Semitism are not only illegal, they undermine the important work necessary to counter anti-Semitism and hate in all forms. Yeah, because there isn't much, is there? And where what is often called anti-Semitism is very justified criticism of Jews or other groups, as the case might be. Anyway, we reiterate our appreciation of the work of the Winnipeg Police Service and their continued support for the Jewish community. Yeah, I'd be happy, though, if we knew the Winnipeg Police Service supported free speech, because they don't. 2 years ago, radical anti-FA group, including, of course, the Jewish Federation, or at least one of the Jewish groups in Winnipeg, I believe, B'nai B'rith, learned about a meeting I was going to hold about the importance of Charlottesville. They pressured a hotel to illegally cancel my bedroom, and the police service, we believe, phoned around town. I was unable to rent a bedroom, not even a meeting room anymore, a bedroom. No, the Winnipeg Police Service certainly supports the Jewish community, just doesn't support free speech. This is Chief Smythe. Wouldn't speculate on a motive for the staging incident, nor would he comment on a previous report of hate-motivated incident at the same restaurant. Ron Ukashi of B'nai B'rith Canada said he's never heard of an alleged fabrication of a racist incident on this scale in Canada. Well, I can tell you some other ones. I don't know about on this scale. But he noted all Winnipeg rallied behind the Jewish community. Yeah, what a country of pussycats, eh? I can see this is a betrayal of the community and a betrayal of also the police, Ukashi said at Winnipeg City Hall. It's a waste of time. And of course, our people might roll their eyes at incidents in the future and say, and think, is it true or is it not? Yeah, well, it probably is not. When in reality, we know the preponderance of incidents of report are in fact true. Winnipeg Mayor Brian Bowman, he's a Métis, he did not support my right to free speech, incidentally, called the alleged fabrication disgusting, and said if the mischief charges are proven in court, the actions of the accused would represent a breach of trust in the community. Jewish Post and News editor Bernie Balan said he had suspicions about the incident. I never thought this was something that they were perpetrating themselves, though. Well, I wonder why he had suspicions. We don't know. Well, here are the silly willies in the white community. Westworth United Church minister Lorraine McKenzie Shepherd had planned an interfaith prayer vigil for Thursday in response to the incident at Burmax. After consulting with members of the Jewish community, the church decided to cancel the event. Oh, why? We decide we are all too raw right now to hold anything. What an idiot. What an absolute wuss. And I wonder if the Jewish community here, and all the Muslims, are going to trek over to the Westworth United Church and offer their condolences to the Christian community for the massacre of Christians in Sri Lanka. Waiting to hear about that story? Well, you better wait a long time. It probably isn't going to happen. Anyway, what else does this silly woman say? Lorraine McKenzie Shepherd, the minister. I should probably not say this, but I have problems with women ministers. Probably not the only one. We want to stay firm and clear and calm in our message of support for the Jewish community, that we continue to stand against anti-Semitism and against hate directed toward any group because of their identity, that silly woman says. I wonder if she shed any tears over the 407 and counting Christians massacred in Sri Lanka. Yeah, I wouldn't think so. But okay, well, let's give the final word to the the chief of police. this is, what's his name? Oh, yes, Danny Smythe. What does he have to say?
And frankly, angry that this family has used hate and racism in such a disingenuous way. In doing so, they have allowed cynicism to creep into this discussion. Cynicism that trivializes genuine victims of hate. Cynicism that risks reinforcing stereotypes that the Jewish community here locally and throughout the world have fought hard to dispel. This staged event has set in motion an investigation that has utilized significant resources from our Major Crimes Division, from our Forensics Division, and our General Patrol Division. Over 25 officers have invested nearly 1,000 hours through a busy holiday weekend trying to bring this investigation to a close. In the end, we found evidence of a crime. It just wasn't a hate crime. These individuals have been charged. Charges are being laid as we speak, and they will appear in court to account for themselves later in May.
Well, there's my guess was bang on, I must say. About 25 officers, 1,000 hours. Have any idea the cost? One hour of a policeman's salary. They're well paid. Now this is an absolute outrage on the taxpayers of Winnipeg. But the silly Willie police chief hasn't learned anything, has he? No. We will continue to take these allegations seriously, etc., etc. The fact is, there's virtually no attack on Jews in Canada or in Winnipeg. Well, this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, but I'm going to take my musical break right now. Let's have another song about betrayal. In this case, it's betrayal of traditional country and Western music. This is a song at first I heard with George Jones and Dierks Bentley. This is the version by George Strait and Alan Jackson, Murder on Music Row. This is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me.
Nobody saw him running from 16th Avenue. They never found a fingerprint or the weapon that was used. But someone killed country music, cut out its heart and soul. They got away with murder down on Music Row. The almighty dollar and the lust worldwide fame slowly killed tradition, and for that someone should hang. They all say not guilty, but the committed down on Music Row.
Wonder what's happening here.
And fiddles barely play, but drums and rock and roll in your face. Oh, Hank, you wouldn't have a chance on today's radio since they committed murder. grass. Once it was dead and gone, they said no one would bother more. Drinking and cheating song. Oh, I still find them drinking song, Georgia. There ain't no justice in it. And the hard facts are cold. That murder was committed. He wouldn't have a chance on the day's radio. Since they committed murder down on Music Row, or they'd even tell the possum to pack up and go back home. There's been murder down on Music Row.
Alan Jackson, everybody!
Alan Jackson and George Strait, Murder on Music Row. I like this song. I like Whispering Bill Anderson. He always sings a great ballad, and it's always a tearjerker, and this is Whispering Bill. I wonder if God likes country music, and I know he does. So the answer to that, Bill, is a yes, but yes. Bill Anderson.
We've talked a lot today about our friends at the Grand Ole Opry, as we salute the Grand Ole Opry. Country's family reunion. I don't think anybody has mentioned the name of Roy Acuff, but I want to do that because some of my greatest memories of being on the Opry were the nights that Mr. Roy would come out on the stage and allow me to share the spotlight with him and do this song right here. I got a lot of wonderful memories. If we have time, I'll share some of you, but first I'd like to do the song, and I hope you'll enjoy it. I hope maybe you remember. One night we were out on tour getting ready to do a show. And at the time, it really wasn't anything all that special. It was what you might call just another one-night stand. When I looked over my guitar, and there stood an old man. His cowboy clothes were frayed and worn, and his boots were far from near. He said, I'd like to sit in with your band. He said, I'm a country singer too. Yeah, well, we just all had a big laugh. When I looked back at the old man, there was a tear in his eye. So I told the band to cool, because I didn't want to see him cry. He reached down and he took my guitar with a determined look on his face. But then as he started to play and sing, a look of sadness took its place. He said, I've sang my songs from Maine to California. Never saved a dime. I always thought so, I'd be a star. But now my voice is cracked, and
no one wants me. My wife gave up on me years ago. It's been so long, my kid don't even know me. And picking singing is the only life I know. And then he said,
I wonder if God likes country music. Will there be a place up there to sing my song? Will he make my fingers nimble like they used to be, so I can play the chord and sing along? I wonder if God likes country music.
I just stood there.
Will there be a place?
None of us really knew what to say. He took my old guitar and he sat it down ever so gently. And then as he turned to leave, the band stood up and applauded. But I can still hear his words today.
I wonder if God likes country music.
Anderson. Here's a great song by Lori Morgan, a song that she first recorded with her husband, the late, very talented, and dead all too soon, Keith Whitley. This is Lori Morgan, A Picture of Me Without You.
By a river where the day
Roy Morgan, the List of Paul Problem. You're on the Fighting Side of Me. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me.
In days of yore from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the fiddle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Dominion now extends from Cape Race to Nootka Sound. May peace forever be our lot and plenteous store abound. And may those ties of love be ours which discord cannot sever, and flourish green o'er freedom's home, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen.